So I'm going to start with the story, and then, because the story is more important than the class. A number of years ago, I read a really brilliant article by a man, Rav Yoel Ben Nun. If you don't know who Rav Yoel Ben Nun is, there's a very strong chance that people who you've studied with have studied with him, or people who you've studied with have studied with people who have studied with him. And he's somebody who, I think without exaggeration or hyperbole, one can say is the leading teacher of Tanakh in the world today. And I read an article about him about the beginning and the end of the year. And he had worked out a very beautiful structure, which I'm not going to speak about. The article's available both in English and in Hebrew. If you look for it, you'll find it. And he said something in it which was striking in terms of his conclusion, which I will completely ruin for you, but not right now. And the reason struck me because it also happened to be represented in Kabbalistic literature. And I sent him an email after I read this, and I said, you know, what you wanted to say is found in the teachings of the Vilna Gaon. And he wrote back, I had no idea. I sent him the source, and he was very, very kind and very, very thankful and very, very humble. And I didn't think that much more of it until 2 weeks later, my niece attended a lecture of his, and he gave over his thesis, and he said, and Rabbi Ari Kahn said, you know, showed me, and he starts quoting me every time he would give this class. And then around a year later, I get a phone call from him, and he asked me for my address. He said that he wrote a book, and this article's in a new book, and he sends me a copy of the book, and he wrote a very nice dedication in the beginning, and he quotes me in the book. So I'm not going to tell him that this week I found an earlier source than the Gaon, because else we'll start this whole thing all over again. But that's what we have to get to before we finish at 10 after 10. So that's where we're moving to. I want to start with much more basic question, and something which we all take for granted. And that is, what exactly are the Aseret Yemei Tshuva? I want to frame it like that. Or, I'll put it a little differently, what exactly is the connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? And I'll explain what I mean by this. Is the connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur something which is organic? Or is it something which is man-made? So that may sound like a very, very strange question. But let's just think about it as follows. We have, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, every single year, as far as we can remember, we have something called Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Actually, it's not just between, it's inclusive on both sides, otherwise you don't get up to 10. When was the first Rosh Hashanah? Well, at least theoretically, though we don't want to go into this huge machloket between Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua when the world was created, but theoretically the world was created on Rosh Hashanah. We actually say that in the davening, which we'll get to soon, Hayom Harat Olam. By the way, that's if it means that. Could be, there's machloket between Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua, if the world was created in Tishrei, the world's created in Nisan. So when we say Hayom Harat Olam, so that seems to be that we follow Rabbi Lezer, the world's created in Tishrei. Of course, unless the word Harat means to become pregnant. Hayom Harat Olam. Today is when the universe became pregnant, although it didn't give birth to it a number of months later, which I don't have to explain to most of you, is how the process generally works. So therefore, the world could be created in Nisan, even though we say Yom Harat Olam. But let's again pause there for a second. So between the very first Rosh Hashanah, which would be roughly 5,700 years ago and change, and the first Yom Kippur, was it 10 days? Which means, was there a Yom Kippur back in the Garden of Eden? Which, when you start thinking about where do we find Yom Kippur for the first time, as far as we can easily locate, it was not until after the Chet HaEgel, when the Jews were forgiven. So instead of 10 days of Tshuva, or Aseret Yemei Tshuva, linking the first Rosh Hashanah and the first Yom Kippur, we probably have around 2,000 years. So, and then I'll say again, so what exactly is the connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? One has to do with creation, and is universal, by the way, for all of mankind. No Jews around in the Garden of Eden. Right? We know that? Although I did see a picture from a certain Hasidic workbook for their elementary age kids, and it showed Noah and his three sons, and all of them did have payas. Don't ask about the racist overtones and how they made Cham look, but it was, okay, I take away the word overtones. but it really was quite bizarre. So I think most of you realize that Adam was not Jewish, right? And Noah was not Jewish, and therefore Rosh Hashanah, which deals with creation, is something which is universal. Yom Kippur is something which deals with forgiveness for the golden calf, and therefore in every year there will be forgiveness on this particular day. Sounds to be much more of a Jewish thing. So again, I'm going to ask, so what exactly are these Aseret Yemei Tshuva? So one thing that we need to be careful about, and we're completely not, is that sometimes the arbiter in terms of hashkafa or Jewish theology ends up being the Siddur or the liturgy. So we look at the first source, it's from the Machzor, and I'm not going to go to the more frightening parts, but I will allude to them. Emet ki atahu dayan, umochiach, v'yodea, v'aid, v'kotev, v'chotem. So that's those important words. So God is the judge, and God is the witness, and God knows everything. God writes, and God seals. V'sofer v'nmone v'tiskor kol nishkachot, and everything is remembered. V'tiftach et sefer hazichronot, u'me'ilav yikare, v'chotem yad kol adambo, u'v'shofer gadol yitaka. By the way, you're not getting any chazanot from me. V'kol dimama daka yishama, u'malachim yechafezun, v'chil rada yechezun, which, okay, the awe, the trembling. Days of Awe is a 19th century term. Yes? Not found any place earlier than that. But over here, you do have the awe and trembling. Apologies to Kierkegaard. It's fear and trembling. V'chil rada yochezun. V'yomu hine yom hadin. V'tichtov v'gzardinam. And on this day, the gzardin, the judgment, is written. V'rosh Hashanah yikatevun. Uviyom Tzom Kippur Yechatemun. Now that's a statement of theology. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur are linked. On Rosh Hashanah things are written. On Yom Kippur things are sealed. And what comes afterwards that we skipped? Umi Yechyeh, Umi Yamut, Umi Ba'esh, Umi Ba'mayim, and all that we want to skip. So essentially it's saying who's going to live and who's going to die. Although we're told something very, very positive and uplifting, utshuvaut filaut staka ma'avirin edroa hagzera. But nonetheless, and apparently this is what it sounds, no matter how horrific our behavior was, no matter what it is that God remembered that we did, no matter what was written, although it doesn't sound like it was sealed yet, it sounds like we do have the ability of somehow reversing this based upon tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. Now, the problem with everything I've said till now is that it's very, very simple, and all of us knew all of this, correct? Now, all that I want to point out is all kinds of things that we've just looked at are actually subject to debate. And when we go back to the Gemara, it's not as simple as we thought. And the exact or the precise process of how these things worked are not as simple as I laid out. And yes, we sometimes will allow our liturgy to determine on our hashkafa and how we look at things. Now, the complexity of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva and what I think is the actual real essence of it, I'm going to try to spell out. So if we just need a framework of what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at 2.5 gemarot. The half doesn't really count. It's just a side point. I'm going to look at 2 gemarot, which may have a tension between them. I'm going to look in the 2 places in the Rambam that he cites those 2 gemarot. We're going to see within the Rambam that the way that he cites them may be really quite complex. We're going to raise a question on the Rambam on how he could have said such a thing. We're going to present 5 or 6, depending on the time, of different responses, and then we're going to go back to some more sources and then hopefully see a much deeper insight. That's everything we're going to do, so let's start. Source number 2, it's Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Inya, Mishmei Derav. Minayin l'gzardin shel tzibur she'enu nechtam. How do we know that when it comes to a community, then God writes but does not seal? There's no chatima. Enu nechtam? What are you talking about, enu nechtam? The haktiv, and don't look too closely. Nechtam avonech lefanai. The reason I said don't look so closely is because that verse should have been translated as, the stain of your sin is in front of me, and somehow nichtam and nechtam sounded real familiar, and the Gemara had no hesitation about quoting one. Although I could say, just to go a little bit, it's not just the plain words. The stain of your sin remains in front of me. What does that mean? That it's permanent. A stain which is permanent, that's the chatima. So that's, which means even though this sounded like it was Purim Torah, it's not. There's a stain that can't come out. That means that it's sealed. Ella, afal gav shenechtam, nikra, even or once it was sealed, can it possibly be ripped up? Shenem markimi Hashem alkein b'chol kareinu alav, v'aktiv dushu Hashem bihi matzo. And it says to call out God when God is accessible. Hatam biyachid, hacha b'tzibur, biyachid emat. So it's saying that when it comes to an individual has one particular time that he could call out to God, and even if something was sealed already, that's what it sounds like, or even though there's a stain, it can still be removed. So the Gemara asks, when is this? When is this time that even an individual, which means when it comes to a tzibur can always change. When it comes to an individual, you know, it's very different when God has the spotlight on one person and looking at one person. Very different and unfortunately far less complex than dealing with an entire society. So when it comes to an entire society, it's saying that a society can always change. But when it comes to an individual, that individual, once they got their judgment, it should be of. The Gemara says no. There is one time that the individual has the ability of changing that decision, that negative decision. Amar Rabba bar Avuha, Elu asarayamim shebein Rosh Hashanah leYom Kippurim. So when we would conclude this section, what does this indicate to us? That if somebody on Rosh Hashanah was written and it was determined and it was decided that this person is wicked, that when Yom Kippur comes around or during these 10 days, that person still has an ability of turning around that decision and turning that negative decision into something which is positive. So our first, unless you want to say it's our second, our first meeting of the Seret Yimei Tshuva came within liturgy. The second one is the Gemara. And what did the Gemara tell us? It gave us hope to guilty individuals. Which then leads us to our next source, number three. Amar Rabbi Krispidai Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Shlosha Sfarim Niftachim B'Rosh Hashanah. There are three books which are opened up in Rosh Hashanah. Echad shel tzadikim gemurim. Now, I'm not sure how to translate the word tzadik. The way that most of us would tend to translate tzadik, which would probably be in a post-Hasidic understanding, where the tzadik is the righteous person, the tzadik is the person who is completely righteous. And over here, by the way, all the more so, tzadikim gemurim, completely righteous people. When we look to Tanakh for guidance, the word tzadik can be used probably in two ways, definitely one way, but probably two ways. The definitely one way that it can be used is a judicial term. A person who's found either guilty or innocent, the one who's found innocent, is the tzadik. V'dstiku at tzadik v'rshiu at rasha. The tzaddik in that sentence is not necessarily somebody who's righteous, or in the Hasidic terminology, that's the tzaddik, or the way that Rabbi Nachman would use the phrase, as the ultimate tzaddik. That person just happens to have been tried, and maybe there's a lot of reason to find them guilty, but there's more reason, 50.1% is enough to be called a tzaddik. I wonder out loud when it says about Noach. Noach ish tzaddik. So Noach ish tzaddik, does that mean that Noach was an absolute turn, somebody who was righteous? Or does it mean that he was innocent while all the other people in that generation was guilty? By the way, it's interesting that none of the other people that you know of are called tzaddikim in Tanakh. Right? People are not called tzaddikim. Yosef is not called a tzaddik directly in Chumash. There is a verse later on, Al Mikram b'kesef tzaddik. So therefore, we assume that deals with Yosef, and that's. But as the term tzaddik is not thrown around. Moshe is not called a tzaddik. Avram is not called a tzaddik. Sarah is not called a tzaddikah. So I'm just saying is that the word tzaddik definitely means innocent in a judicial sense. The only question that I have is if it means more than that. Now, over here, when we're dealing with judgment, you understand why I'm leaning in a direction, or at least opening up the question, are we talking about something which is righteous in terms of the element of this person's personality, or are we talking about something which is essentially a judicial decision, person innocent or guilty? So I'm just raising that right now as a question, but let's read the Gemara. Again, the three books are opened up. In one book, it says, Echad shel tzadikim gemurim, someone who is completely either righteous or innocent, but innocent not in, I don't know what way to call this, you want to call it an existential way, or no, in a legalistic way. The Echad shel rishaim gemurim, and one book is of people who are completely wicked. The Echad shel beinonim, and there's the third book, which is a book of beinonim. Now, of course, I would love a definition to know what makes you righteous and what makes you wicked, and what, for that matter, what makes you beinonim. Beinoni, if we'll need to translate, we'll translate as someplace in the middle. The best word I can use for this would probably be mediocre. That's the person. Beinoni is there's a book of mediocrity. Now the question is, so in terms of humanity, how many people fit into one book and how many people fit into the other book? See, when I say tzadikim gemurim, completely righteous people, so that could be a really small book. I'm sorry for saying that. When it says Rishaim Gemurim, is that also a small book or is that a larger book? Okay, that depends on how you look at the world. Okay, but if my two extremes are completely wicked and completely righteous, so then my largest book will end up by default being my book of mediocrity, which may very well put us all in that book. Hold on for 1 second, and I want to read a little bit more. Because what happens to those of us in that book? Shel tzadikim gemurim, the righteous or completely righteous or completely innocent people, nechtavim v'nechtamim la'altar l'chayim. They are written and sealed immediately into the book of life. Which, by the way, on Rosh Hashanah, which means that they can take the next 10 days off. Shel rishayim gemurim, the completely wicked or guilty, nechtavim v'nechtamim la'altar l'mita. Are immediately written and sealed in a book of death, which means, the implication is, it makes no difference what they do the next 10 days. They may as well take the next 10 days off. Ubeinonim, but only when it comes to the people in the middle, tluyim v'omdim, they're held in abeyance, me Rosh Hashanah ad Yom HaKippurim, from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, zachu, what does the word zachu mean? They merited, they had zchut, they merited, nechtavu l'chayim. It's interesting, it says written, it doesn't say sealed. Nechtavu l'chayim. Lo zachu, but if they did not merit it, nechtavim l'mita, then they are written for death. The conclusion of this Gemara is the 10 days of tshuva are only there for the beinonim, which means everyone else can go to the beach, everyone else can take off a Aseret Yimei tshuva. Now, Rashi is going to make this a little bit more difficult for us in source 4. Rishaim Gemurim, if you want your definition, he writes, Rubam Avonot, which means they have a majority in terms of their behavior of sin. Beinonim Mechtza Al Mechtza are in the middle. So what did Rashi just now do? He turned this into a question of quantity. If you have more mitzvot than sin, you are found innocent. By the way, that takes us to innocent instead of tzaddik. You are then innocent. If you have more sins than you have righteous behavior, you're guilty. But only if you end the year at an absolute tie. You know, you say tie in modern Hebrew? Teku, right? Only if you end the year at a tie do you have a Aseret Yimei Tshuva, which once we use this opinion of Rashi, it sounds like it should be very, very few people. I mean, it's not nice to say this, but how many people are going to end the year at a virtual numerical tie? It means that in heaven, God has a bunch of angels who are essentially working as Ro'ei Cheshbon, as accountants. As accountants, and they're all sitting and working the numbers over there, and you know, forget about April 15th and so on, they're all working the numbers over there, and they finish the year, and they take a look, okay, this guy's got three more sins, put him in that pile. This guy has three more good, put him in this. Basically, heaven is the IRS, And there's only going to be a very few amount of people who are going, for a lot of people, hell is the IRS, right? So, and very few people, ostensibly, very few people should be, at the end of the year, at an absolute tie. So I'll say again, Aseret Timei Teshuva, it could be a lot of us, because we're tzaddikim, you say, oh, I must be a Beinoni, right? None of us, we're really wicked, right? How many of you think you're really wicked? Okay, you don't have to raise your hands. But no, put it down. How many of us at the end of the year think we're really, really wicked? Most don't. How many think we're really, really righteous? We don't. We all see ourselves as someplace in the middle. So we utilize the 10 days. But if I'm not mistaken, I think there really is a tension between the two Gemarot that we saw. One Gemara seems to indicate even if you were, it was decided that you're wicked, you have these 10 days to rip it up. It's not sealed. And over here in the second Gemara, it sounds like, no, that's written and sealed. Both good and bad are written and sealed, but it's only the mediocre who have the extension to file the extra 10 days in order to determine what their status is. So it really does seem to me that there's a difference. And I'll go back to our liturgy. Our liturgy seems to be focused on Rosh Hashanah. It's written on Yom Kippur. It's sealed, and it seems to go within the direction of our second source. Although there's another issue that perhaps we did not pay attention to. Before I mention this second issue, I just want to say something else parenthetically. I told you there were 2.5 Gemarot. This is the half. The half of Gemara also speaks about books, but speaks about 2 books as opposed to 3 books. And this is in source number 5. Over here, the Gemara is raising the question, which perhaps some of us seems like an absurdity. It says, why exactly on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur do the Jews not say Hallel? Are these holy days? Are these Yom Tovim? So on all our other Yom Tovim, we say Hallel. Who asks the question? The angels ask God. By the way, very interesting. The angels, the ones who are doing the counting, the ones who know what's really going on, they're saying, why aren't the Jews saying Hallel on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? These are days of unbelievable holiness. So let's take a look at source number 5. We're going to skip a little bit. Amar Rabbi Abahu, towards the end of the first line. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amru Malchei Asharet Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe. Mibnei Ma'in Yisrael Omrim, Shira Lefanecha Barosh Hashanah V'Yom HaKippurim. Why are the Jews not saying Shira, song, psalms, Hallel? Why are the Jews not saying Hallel on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim? Amar Lahem, God answers the angels, Efshar Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Din, can it possibly be that the judge, meaning God speaking about himself as a judge, who's sitting on the throne of judgment, v'sifrei chayim v'sifrei metim, and the book of the living and the book of the dead, p'tuchim lefanav, are opened in front of him, v'yisrael omrim shira, and the Jews are going to say, Hallel? Which means God, it's interesting, because the angels know how this works out every year. And how does it work out? Somehow it works out okay. But God is saying, but there's still some fear. I mean, he goes, you know, you have to understand the Jews. There's this whole process going through. And within this process, everyone knows needs to do their job. He says, I'm sitting in judgment. They have to pray. But it's interesting that the angels, by the way, what's the job of the angels generally? To say Shira. So the angels are saying, why are the Jews not saying Shira? I mean, these are holy days where they should be saying it. And God says, yeah, but the Jews are a little, you know, worked up because they're a little scared. Now, when we read this Gemara, the most basic way of reading it would to say that the book of who will live and who will die, which will take us right back to our Netana Tokef, Mi Yichya V'Mi Yamut, but it didn't say that. It says Sifrei Chaim V'Sifrei Metim. So Rav Chaim V'Lazhin already posed this question, and he said, well, I don't understand. Again, going with the precise language. He goes, I know why the book of who are living should be opened, but why does God open every year the book of the dead? They're already dead. There's no reason to judge them anymore. And the answer which is given, it's found in a book called the Pachad Yitzchak, but this is an old Pachad Yitzchak, not Rav Huttner. And the Pachad Yitzchak writes that every year God judges. God judges all of humanity, but God judges all of humanity for eternity. What this means is that God judges every single person, whether they're alive or dead. But again, you'll ask Rav Chaim V'Lazhin's question. People are dead, why judge them? And the answer is, what impact have they had on the world in the past year? Has the impact that they've had in the past year been one which causes an elevation of their soul, or perhaps the other? So therefore, he says that God judges the living and the dead. And if this seems strange to you, I do want to say something, and this is going to get us much deeper into where we want to go eventually. We believe that there's a concept of free will. Generally, we understand free will as something which dictates the present toward the future. Despite the fact that God created every single one of us with our own unique combination of nature and nurture, that every single one of us was created and placed in certain situations and given certain capabilities, nonetheless, every one of us have the ability of making decisions. And by the way, I'm not saying that everyone has the ability of making every decision, but God judges us in terms of our places that we're put and the decisions that we make. I think ultimately free will of decisions we make to become closer to God as opposed to more alienated from God. And I'm really breaking it down in what I believe to be the most simple way. But we tend not to think about free will in terms of our orientation towards the past. And that's what the Pachad Yitzchak is saying, is that the idea of tshuva is not just I can decide that I'm going to rehabilitate myself and change my orientation and change things I'm going to do present towards future, but it even seems to believe that I can change things from the past. I made a mistake yesterday. I hurt someone yesterday, and I insulted somebody yesterday. I said hurtful words, so I can go back to them and say, I am sorry, I won't do this again, and try to work on that relation, try to fix it. I did something in terms of man and God I should not have done, and I say, I'm sorry, I take upon myself not to do it. So of course, the logical way of looking at this would be that this changes the present as we move towards the future, but Judaism believes that this changes the past. And if I can change the past, now how far into the past can I go? Can I change 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago? Again, just think for a second. I think on the average day, more Jewish people read the words of Rashi than any other Jewish author. Is that a fair assessment? Of all Jewish authors in history, I think Rashi is studied more every single day than any other author. Does that not change Rashi's neshama on a daily basis because more and more people were impacted by Rashi? Rashi has more impact today than he had in his own lifetime, as bizarre as that may sound. He's affecting more people on a daily basis. So would it really be fair that Rashi was only judged by the day that he died and that's it? Okay, you go to heaven, that's it? No. Rashi's neshama changes every single time somebody else learns Rashi and is inspired by Rashi. Which means when the Book of the Living and the Book of the Dead are opened in Rosh Hashanah, there is something which is very dynamic about this judgment that takes place because humanity is dynamic. And therefore, we have the ability of changing the reality of people who are no longer here. That is, I think, part of the most liberating concepts of tshuva. We can change the reality of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents who are no longer here by taking certain things that they left with us and using it and sharing it and going further with it. Which means the idea of tshuva is not just... By the way, if you've never imagined before the possibility of Mashiach really coming and having really getting to the redemption, it is this ability of changing the past, which suddenly just... Sorry for using this such a bad term for it. That's the game changer. It's not just that today we can change our decision for tomorrow. We can change things that have happened in the past. That's ultimately the power that Am Yisrael has. But therefore, this Gemara, if it deals with the books of the living and the dead, has nothing to do with what we've been speaking till now, so that's why we place that on the side. Now, going back to our Gemara, the books of the righteous and the wicked and the mediocre, Tosfot tells us something which we probably did not see coming. At the end of source number 6, and on your own you can read the rest of it, the kol ze dekari hacha gabi rishaim mita vagabi tzadikim chayim, and everything we've been saying about either the righteous or the wicked or the innocent and the guilty regarding life and death, klomar lechaye haolam haba. All of the discussion over here has nothing to do with this world. All of this only is a question of our share in the world to come. What Tosfot just now said, which you don't have to tell me, goes completely against our liturgy. It's not mi yichyeh umi yamut and mi ve'eshu mi v'mayim. What he is saying is that God does a yearly assessment of what your share in the world to come is, and that's done every Rosh Hashanah. That's what Tosfot just now said. It's sort of if any of you have pensions, so you want to take a look at what the status of your pension is right now. You want to know what's going to happen after you retire, how much money is sitting in that account. So it could be that you take a look and therefore you have a great amount of money accrued, or it could be that you take a look at that account and there's nothing there. It's actually, you've drawn money off of it, and you're in minus on that, and you're in a very difficult situation afterwards. According to Tosfot, again, I'll say it, Tosfot just said it. You can read the words as many times as you want. He says, all of this klomer l'chayei ha'olam haba. He said, Rosh Hashanah, yes, you're shocked, I see. Because all these years, like you've had Rosh Hashanah, because we fall for the liturgy. Tosfot, I don't know if he said this or didn't say it, but Tosfot did not believe that that's what Rosh Hashanah is. He believes that Rosh Hashanah is the state of your neshama. That's what it is. It's a state of your neshama, and every single neshama gets a statement. You don't necessarily get to see it. Statement is filed on how your neshama is doing at this particular point. And he's not the only one of the Rishonim that said this. Esther, you follow me here. No, it's worse than that. You're being nice. It's worse than that. It's much worse than that. And by the way, your question is actually part of what motivated Tosfot. Let me hold off a second. Have you ever wondered something? If one second, Shnia. Rachamim, you want Rachamim also? Have you ever wondered something? If every year all the wicked are found guilty, why are there so many of them still around? Can you imagine Tosfot, Rabbeinu Tam, living the generation after the Crusades and saying, there's still a lot of wicked people in the world, and they seem to make it every year past Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, he has a huge theological question, how to understand these issues. And he gives really a very elegant theological answer that Rosh Hashanah's judgment has nothing to do with this world, that Rosh Hashanah's judgment has to do with the world to come. Which means it's precisely to answer a difficult question that I can now look at Rabbeinu Tam and say, okay, you know what? Even though it did not resonate with any of us initially, at least we can understand where it's coming from. There's a huge question which is being resolved by this particular position that Tosfot takes. Let's move over to the Rambam now. Source number 9. There were two Gemarot. One spoke about the 10 days of tshuva. You know what? I skipped. I feel bad. We'll go back. Source number 7. What do you say in Rosh Hashanah? What do you say on the days leading up to Rosh Hashanah? You take Ktiva v'chatima tova. By the way, you realize that comes straight off of our Gemara. Ktiva v'chatima tova. When you're saying it, are you wishing it for this? When do you stop saying it? Are you wishing it for this world or the next world? You never thought about that. Okay, good. Can you imagine sending people New Year's cards saying, have a good place in heaven? I mean, they may not take this the right way. Hope no one from American Greetings is listening. But is it? When do you stop saying Ktiva v'chatima tova? Depends how late you come to shul the second day. Actually, you say it until they blow the shofar on this first day, and that's when the judgment took place. That's when the ktiva took place. And what do you say afterwards? Gemar chatima tova. Okay, let's hope that it worked out, right? That's what we're saying. I'm sorry, this is... Source number 7 is the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch. V'noagin shekol achad omer l'chaveiro l'shana tova. Tikatev. It's interesting. He does not know about Ktiva v'chatima. He goes, may you all be written well. The Vilna Gaon in source number 8, he says, Kimashish Masha Katav Shlosha Sfarim Hainu L'chaye Olam Haba. The Vilna Gaon agrees with Tosfot. He goes, no, yeah, Rosh Hashanah is all about the next world. Nothing to do with this world. V'lo Kaharan Shekatav Olam Hazeh Ela Chaye Olam Hazeh Shavim b'chol adam eladav apishe nechtav im choza b'seret mitzvah nikra gzardin v'nechtav v'nechtam b'yom ha'kipurim l'tova v'zeh ha'to'elet ha'inu nechtam ad yom ha'kipurim v'zeh shektav shav b'intayim v'zeh shemevakshim b'seret mitzvah v'katavnu likara gzardin v'katavnu l'chayim v'lechein in l'omro v'tichatem ela tikatev. I'm not going to explain everything I just now said, but the Vilna Gaon thinks that it's actually very negative, because there are good people that should be good that it was sealed already. He says, we don't wish people to be sealed. We don't want any sealing taking place. We want everything written in ink that can be easily changed afterwards. because we want the 10 days to be utilized. We want Yom Kippur to be utilized. And he's explaining the Ramah over here that we never say Ktiva V'chatima. Although the truth is I don't understand this, because we should say, or it would make sense to say Ktiva V'chatima Tova. Let's hope that everything is already done and sealed. But the Vilna Gaon, like, it scares him a lot. And, no, let's just have the Ktiva, and then let's use the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and then let's get to Yom Kippur and use it well. And if it was anything negative, let's get it ripped up. Although, he does seem to say that everything is about the world to come, but we have more things to say about the Vilna Gaon, which we will be neder come back to. So now to the Rambam in source number 9. Source number 9 is in the second chapter of Hilchot Tshuva. Here he's dealing with the first Gemara that we had read. Even though the tshuva and crying out to God is always efficient, the Rambam just added something. Not only is the Aseret Yemei Tshuva good, but it works. Shenemar, and what's the verse? Dirshu Hashem bihimatzo. That God is more accessible during these days. B'medver mamrum b'yachid. This is talking about an individual who sometimes can have a very hard time connecting to God. About tzibur kol zman shosim tshuva v'tzokim b'lev shalem, him ne'inim shenemar, and so on and so forth. Which means that tzibur can decide at any time they want, we together will change, perhaps like Nineveh, we will get together and we will cry, we will pray, and tzibur can always do this. The individual has a Aseret Yemei Tshuva, but there's another point, that he's assured. We're assured during Aseret Yemei Tshuva that God is accessible, and if we do this with sincerity, this will work. Halacha Zayin, Yom HaKippurim hu zman tshuva l'kol, liyachid ul'rabim, v'hu ketz mechila u'slichal Yisrael. L'ficha chayavim hakol lasot tshuva ul'tvadot b'yom HaKippurim. The Yom HaKippur, again, it's the culmination of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. By the end of Yom Kippur, we can do anything. We can change all kinds of decrees. So, if I were to conclude what the Rambam did over here, he took this Gemara that we saw earlier about the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and the impression is that we can even destroy negative decisions, although do you notice he didn't really say that? He sort of skipped that part of the Gemara. He talks about the efficiency of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, but he never got to the thing which really concerns me. If you're already written and sealed as somebody who's guilty, can you change? He just says that even the individual's answered, but he doesn't say what is it that they are answered about. The fuller treatment of the Rambam will take place in the next chapter, which is source number 10. And here, hopefully, you will see in the background, and he'll say it clearly at some point, he's going to get to the three books. Halacha Aleph. Kol echad v'echad mibnei ha'adam, notice universal, all humanity, yesh lo zechuyot v'avonot. All people have good and bad. Mi shezechuyotav yiterot al avonotav tzadik. If you have more good than bad, you're a tzadik. So I'm going to ask again, is the Rambam using the word tzadik in a judicial sense? Or is he using it in terms of this existential reality that this person is, again, clearly judicial. Umisha avnotav yiterot al zechuyotav rasha. Somebody who has more bad than good is wicked. Umechsa lemechsa beinoni. So how are you a beinoni? By the way, it sounds, again, according to the Rambam, there should not be all that many beinonim. And if you've noted, this is the same thing we were told by Rashi. V'chein medina im hayu zechuyot kol yoshver murbot avnotem reizet sadeket. Same thing works with a country. Just basically more good than bad. Halacha bed. Adam sha'avonotav murubim azuchuyotav. It's an excellent question. Hold on to that because he's going to qualify everything he says soon because he's the Rambam. Adam sha'avonotav murubim azuchuyotav miyad humeit berisha'o. If you have more bad than good, you immediately die. By the way, now you realize you can ask a question on that? That means every person you ever meet has to be righteous. Shenemar rov avonech. V'chein medina sh'avonotem rubim miyadi ovedet. And any wicked society is immediately destroyed. Shenemar zakat stoma v'amara ki rabba. By the way, is Tosfot making more and more sense now? V'chein kol olam kulo miyo avonotem rubim mizuchuyoteim. Miyadim nishchatin shenemar vayar Hashem ki rabba ra'at ha'adam. And now here's where the Rambam qualifies this and basically says, but you don't know what's going on. V'shikul zeh einu lafi minyan hazuchuyot v'avanot. It's not a question of quantity, ed lafi gadlam. It's a question of quality. So therefore, your question that you just now raised in terms of, you know, how can this actually work out mathematically? He just said, well, it's not mathematical. There's a factor over here that puts values in terms of the good and the bad. Yesh zchut shehi keneged kama avonot shenemar yanim tzabo devar tov. You can have one good thing which can outweigh many bad things. Ve'yesh avon shu keneged kama zuchuyot shenemar v'chotei achad yabei tova harbe. And you can have one bad thing that can get rid and erase all kinds of good. Ve'ein shoklin ele bedato shokel deot, hu yodeya heich ochim hazuchiyot keneged avonot. And the only one who has any knowledge about how to go about doing this is God. So don't play God, and you're not, because you can't understand this, which means the Rambam gave us a beautiful way of understanding it and then told us, but you can't understand it anyway. So we're not sure yet what to do with this. And the Ravid then argues and gives us a third possibility other than Tosfot and the Rambam, a third possibility that perhaps we haven't thought of, and he says, "Adam sha'avanotav mirubin mazuchuyot miyad hu meit b'rasho." He's quoting the part of the Rambam that the person who's guilty has more bad than good immediately dies. Amar Avraham, the Ravid writes, "Lo kemosha hu sover," not like he thinks. Shekisha amru sha'im nechtamim la'altad l'mitasha miyad meitim. It never meant they die immediately. That's not what it meant. Ve'enu kein ki yesh rasha'im chayim harbe. He goes, Ravid says, I don't know if you've noticed, there's a lot of wicked people walking around. Ella nechtamim la'altar shelo yimalu yimehem shnei hador shenigzru alav. What he says is that every person in terms of nature was given an amount of years that they would live al pi derech hateva. But what God judges you is, will you get your allotted time or will you perhaps get an extension? But what he's saying over here is that immediately the person who's found guilty dies, it means they die and they will not be given any kind of an extension. So the Raiva just threw this whole other element into looking at this. Continue, Halacha Gimel, back in the Rambam. U'kishem sheshoklim zuchiyot adam v'avanot b'shat mitato. And now you know the Rambam does not necessarily agree with Tosfot. Just like everyone is judged when they die, kach bekol shana v'shana shoklim avanot kol echad v'chad mibei olam im zuchuyotav. Every single person's good and bad is weighed. B'yom tov shor Rosh Hashanah, and that's what happens on the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Mi shenim tzadik, and once again the tzadik is judicial, nechtam l'chaim. By the way, you notice the Rambam did not bother with the ktiva, he goes straight to the chatima. He goes, anybody who's considered to be righteous is immediately sealed in the Book of Life. Mishnim tzarasha nechtam lemita, immediately sealed for death. V'habeinuni tolinoto, and once again, the person who is mediocre is held in abeyance ad yom kippurim. Im asa tshuva, and there's a reason those three words are bolded. Pay attention to those three words. Im asa tshuva, if the person repented, nechtam l'chayim, then they too are sealed. Again, no writing for life. V'im lav, but if they don't do tshuva, nechtam l'mita, then they're sealed for death. Does anybody note the difficulty in the Rambam? When we go back to the Gemara, what did the Gemara say? They said there are people who are righteous, completely righteous, and they're put in the Book of the Living. People who are completely wicked, and they're put in the Book of Death. And then there are the Beinonim, they're in the middle, and they're given 10 more days. What did the Gemara say? I'm sorry to make you think back. What did the Gemara say? If you have to look at the words, you can. The Gemara said two words. Im zachu. What does the words im zachu mean? If they had more merit. What was the other alternative? Im lo zachu. And by the way, I again question, you know, to what extent any of this is talking about judicial terminology. Im zachu. Now, how exactly can you go about breaking a tie? I have a tie at the end of the year. According to Rashi, the tie is because there's an absolute tie between the two, which We've already questioned, you know, how exactly that works. According to the Rambam as well, there's a tie, although the Rambam said there's another factor. What's the other factor? The other factor is that it's not just in terms of quantity, it's also in terms of quality, but there's still a tie. So how do you break a tie? So there's actually a bunch of ways to break a tie. One way to break the tie is to do more mitzvot. Another way to break the tie is to do more averot, right? There's a third way to break the tie, and what's that? To do tshuva, which means, okay, this idea of breaking the tie because you hate ties by doing more averot, let's all agree, we'll push that on the side. We don't want to consider that right now. But we do realize there's another way of breaking the tie. So if I have 10 more days, I have an extension. So during the extension, how do I break the tie? I could do more mitzvot, I could do tshuva, I could do a combination, I could do all kinds of things. What did our liturgy say? Tshuva, utfila, utzdaka, mavir netura gzera, which is again based on the Gemara. So therefore, tshuva, tfila, utzdaka. So why did the Rambam just now write, im asat tshuva, nechtam l'chayim? Ostensibly, what the Rambam just now did is he limited this, and he told us there's really only one way of surviving the Aseret Yemei Tshuva for the Beinoni, and the only way out for the Beinoni is to do tshuva. That, by the way, is a huge question which occupied the minds of all kinds of people in the 19th and 20th centuries. I mean, we can easily right now go through half a dozen different answers. The only question is, if we will, we'll look at one of the earlier people who raised the question, and that's in Source 11, the Lechem Mishnah. And unfortunately, some of the later people just said what he said, but failed to note it, which is strange because it's a commentary on the Rambam. Im asat tshuva nechtam, vim lav nechtam lemita, vim tomer, ki lo asat tshuva amai nechtam lemita. Just because you didn't do tshuva. And let's pause a second. Let's say, for example, that somebody was in Miluim during a Aseret Yemei Tshuva. And they didn't have the opportunity of getting up and saying slichot. And they didn't have the opportunity, let's say, of giving staka, at least in the formal sense that makes us feel really good that you see some poor person and give them a shekel or two even. But let's just say that the person was busy protecting Am Yisrael. And let's even say that something far more dramatic took place and this person, you know, did something heroic. So you're going to say that the person who did something heroic and saved thousands or tens of thousands or saved his whole, you know, unit or whatever the case may be, sorry, you didn't do tshuva during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, so therefore, you know, off to the other side. I'm just saying, how can you possibly say such a thing? I'm asking the Rambam. How can you possibly say such a thing? How could it possibly be that the only thing that you can do is tshuva, and if you didn't do tshuva, that's it? Yeah. Very, very good, very good. The Rambam in the first chapter, he does an interesting dance. I may or may not give a lecture on this tonight, but he does a very interesting dance between vidui and tshuva. But what the Rambam is doing, at least in my mind, in the first chapter, is he's looking for the biblical source. The Rambam, by the way, is far more connected to biblical terminology and reality that I think we sometimes give credit to. So the Rambam did something which no one did before, as far as I know. He wrote a book on tshuva. If you look at earlier books of mitzvot, people didn't deal with 10 chapters of tshuva. So he essentially is writing a new book, and he's thinking now, how do I present the world of tshuva? So he says there's a biblical model for it, and the biblical model is the whole world of the Beit HaMikdash and the Korbanot. And within the world of the Korbanot, the key part of the Korban, at least for the individual, is going to be when the person says vidui. So he uses the biblical model as the springboard to get into the whole concept of tshuva, and I think that's what he does in the first chapter. You're absolutely correct in pointing out that for the Rambam, even later tshuva needs to be somehow connected to the biblical model, where within the Korban, it's going to be the vidui, the confession that the individual makes when he brings the Korban. So the Rambam takes the vidui and says, that's going to be the main part of the tshuva. Now, even with your observation, I still go back and I say, and the person can break a tie without doing vidui, without, even if it may be accessible, but without doing vidui, without doing tshuva. Aren't there other ways of breaking the tie? Which means, how did you get to this situation in the first place? That over the last 12 months, you did do good and you did bad. And what happened at the end of these 12 months? In whatever way God figures this out, and I don't know what that way is, because the Ram told me I don't know what that way is, but somehow God weighs the good and weighs the bad, and somehow it came out the same. And I'm asking again, why is it that according to the Rambam, the only way of breaking the tie is taking away bad, and I can't break the tie by somehow doing more good? That's the question that I think needs to be asked over here. When I look in the Lechem Mishnah, he writes, V'im tomer ki lo asa tshuva, mai nechtam l'mita, ha-mechza mechza, v'rav chesed mata klape chesed. This was Esther's point before. That if it's a tie, shouldn't God's compassion win out and give us the tie? Okay, it worked out as a tie, so therefore you don't have more bad than good. Well, think about it. You don't have more bad than good, so you should be found innocent. The only people who should be found guilty are people of more bad than good. If you ended up with a tie, that should be enough. Okay, there's not more bad than good. So why is being a Beinoni... Okay, I'm a Beinoni going into the Seret Yemei Teshuvah. I finish the Seret Yemei Teshuvah, I'm still a Beinoni. So why, if I'm still a Beinoni, am I now sealed for death? What happened? I'm still a Beinoni. Why is that suddenly bad? Why am I now felt... Why did I just find myself guilty? So Lech Mishnah gives a wonderful answer, which I can't agree with. But you'll like it. I shouldn't have told you that. I could have sold it. Total mistake on my part. He writes, Kvar tirtzu bezeh, so now you realize that he's citing from earlier sources, Dehecha delo asa tshuva have avon echad nosaf ala avonot. Mishum debe'elu aseret yamim shel tshuva hu chayev laso tshuva. Ve'im lo asa hare avon echad nosaf ala avonot. So it's a very nice answer. It's a very nice answer. What does he say? You know, let me put it this way. Let's say that Pesach comes along and a person forgot to have a Seder. I'm saying they didn't have a Seder. So everything's the same? Or no, you didn't have a Seder. You didn't eat matzah. You didn't, right? You didn't have the four cups. You didn't tell the story of leaving Egypt. It's not just everything's the same. So what happens if 10 days of Tshuva, Yom Kippur come along and you just sort of forget to do what you're supposed to do on Yom Kippur? So it's not just that you are still in the middle. Lech Mishnah is saying, you just now broke the tie by not doing tshuva. Now, that's a very good answer, but it completely doesn't answer it. Why doesn't it answer it? The Rambam said it in the second chapter. He said, and therefore everybody's obligated to do tshuva. But still, that's... My point is, so let's just say that, again, during this time, the person did seven more good things. Even dramatically good things. Again, what Lech Mishnah said, excuse me, If on the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah and Yom Kippur, you were not in shul and you didn't daven, that's it. Excuse me. I'm not being fair. I accept this 100%. I'm just pointing out that there's more than one way to break the tie. And why do the Rambam limit it? And even if you are selling the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah and Yom Kippur as being so important, it's still not the only way to break a tie. That's what I mean. This is a great answer. It just doesn't really answer it. Yes? Yes. One of the students of Yisroel Salanter, Rav Itzler Blazer, Rav Itzler me Pressburg. No? You're not up on your Yisroel Salanter? He says the same thing. He says it more dramatically. And he says that the Seret Yemei Teshuvah is the time to do it. And he just tries to be more dramatic. He quotes something from a book called the Reshit Chachma, who in turn quotes something from a Midrash in Kohelet Rabbah. The Midrash in Kohelet, you don't have all this in front of you. If you want, you can email me. I'll send you the other six pages of sources that I held out on you. The Midrash in Kohelet Rabbah gives a mashal. It says a bunch of people are in prison on a death sentence. And the guard leaves the door open. And all the people run away except for one. So the judge, the king, whoever the story ends up, goes to that one person and says, you're going to get a worse punishment than the rest of them. He goes, why? They all ran away. He goes, yeah, they were at least afraid. You weren't even afraid. Which means during a Seret Yemei Teshuvah, you have an opportunity to run away. How did you not use this opportunity? It's the same thing as Lech Mishnah, a little bit more dramatic. You had to use that opportunity. You didn't use that opportunity. How could you possibly survive it? I'll say it again. And let's just say you did 20 other things which are far more dramatic. You went to Houston and tried to help people who were suffering, right? There's a hurricane that took place, and you're helping one person after the other, and you're, again, literally saving lives. How in the world are you going to tell me, oh, but you didn't, you know, do exactly what you needed to do? So that's why, as dramatic as you want to put this, it still gets difficult. I'll give you two more answers, and we'll move on. Yes? Okay, I'll give three more answers then. Go ahead, continue. Okay, very good. Very good. I'll give one answer, read a little more of the Rambam, then two more approaches, one of them that you will like. You have no choice, by the way. If we continue in the Rambam, in Halacha Dalid, he writes, Afal Pishat Kiat Shofar Perosh Hashanah Gzerata Katuv, on page 2 towards the bottom, Afal Pishat Kiat Shofar Perosh Hashanah Gzerata Katuv, Remez Yeshbo Klumu Uru Mishenim Mishenatchem, V'Tardimim Hikitsumi Tardimitchem. In English, in one or two words, that Rosh Hashanah, there is a decree from the Torah to blow the shofar. We don't really know what it means, but he says symbolically, it's a wake-up call. It's an alarm clock. Elu ashochachim et emet bavlei hazman v'shogim kol shnatam behevel v'rik asher lo ye'il v'lo yatzio. People who are walking around in a stupor all year round. Hibitu l'nafshotechem, look into your souls, v'yitivu darkechem, and fix your ways. U'malechem v'yazov kol achad mikem darko ra'a machshavato asher tova. That we need change, which really goes to your point, is that the Rambam continues, says we really need change. V'fichach tzarech kol adam she'iret atzmo. Everyone should see themselves, and I want to really emphasize that. We need to look at ourselves. Kol hashanah kula ki ilu chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayav. We should look at ourselves as being the Beinoni, as being somebody in the middle. V'chein kol olam chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayav. We should look at the whole world as being someplace in the middle. And we should look at it, chatach chet echad, harei chri et atzmo bet kol olam kulo. L'kav chova v'gorm lo ashchata. Asa mitzvat achad, harei chri et atzmo bet kol olam kulo. L'kav zchut v'gorm lo lahem tshuva v'tzala shenem marvit tzadik yisod olam. Which really sounds like he's using tzaddik in the other way. He said, how should we look at ourselves and our lives? As if our lives are literally in the balance. The whole world is in the balance. We do one thing, we can save ourselves and save the whole world. By the way, according to the Rambam, is that reality or is that motivation? Is it strategy? It sure sounded like strategy. Continue. And if you do it, you should look at yourself as if you've just saved the world. Zeshet tzaddak ichriyat kolam l'schut v'tzilo. And therefore, during this time, we should do more mitzvot, give tzedakah, do all kinds of things. By the way, will it help? It's very interesting because a moment ago he said that only tshuva is going to help. And then he says, but I need to do all these things anyway. So this combination between the two, the Rambam himself is aware of. It's just the question, again, I'm going to say this dynamic of how it works. Agreed. Tshuva is a good idea. I'm not knocking it. I'm just questioning why it's the only idea. I told you, I'll give you another couple of explanations. One is found in the writings of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who's Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva. So in his published writings, he quotes the... You don't have this. He quotes the Alter from Navardik, and he says as follows. He says that the terminology of tluyim va'omdim maybe needs to be understood a little bit better. So he says it like this. Imagine the following image. Tluyim va'omdim. What does the word talui mean? Hanging. So he says that if you're Beinoni, God puts a noose around your neck on Rosh Hashanah. What is Tluyim Va'omdim? You're standing on the gallows. Tluyim Va'omdim. You're on the stand and you already have the noose around your neck. If you do tshuva, then you can save yourself from the gallows. If you do something else, it's not enough. But I need to explain a little bit more. Anybody who's ever had a business knows, hopefully, there's a reason to have a business. What's the reason? There's one word answer to this only. Profitability. If you're not profitable, it's a bad idea to have a business. If you're losing money all the time, then you may as well shut the business. If you break even all the time, there's also no reason to have a business. So essentially, God created all of us, and he's invested in all of us, and he wants us all to be profitable. What the altar is saying, if you're not profitable, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, if you're not profitable, we shut you down. God wants profitability. So therefore, if you're a losing proposition, we shut you down on Rosh Hashanah. If you are profitable, we keep you going. If you're Thai, we give you an extension in order to become profitable. But he's saying it's worse than that. You were found guilty of not being profitable on Rosh Hashanah. And the only way you can turn this around is if you're going to now figure out how to become profitable. And therefore, the only way you can turn this around is by doing tshuva. Because another mitzvah is not going to help at this point anymore. Because it's not a question of doing one thing. You need to now figure out how to be profitable because you were already found guilty for not being profitable. And that's where he says only tshuva. And by the way, even though this is a much more dramatic answer, it doesn't really help either, according to the questions that I raised. So, and if you did 10 more things, you've become profitable in those 10 days. Which leads us to, I told you, okay, two more answers. One is found in the writings of a Talmud Chacham who died very, very young. He was born in, I'm not sure if he was born in Brisk or he studied in Brisk, and then later on he came to Israel, and he, it's called the Emek Bracha. And as I said, he died very, very young, in his around the age of 35 or so. He was very close with the Brisk Rav, who he studied with in Brisk, and he was very close with the Chazon Ish as well. So let me quickly see if I have it here. Yes, I do. You don't. It's source 18, which you don't have. And his name was Rav Aryeh Pomeranchik, 1908 to 1942. Just died suddenly, died in his sleep. And he writes something which makes a great deal of sense, but we're still not going to stay with it, even though some of you are going to go for it. He says, excuse me, when does the year begin? Rosh Hashanah. When does the year end? The last day of Elul. He goes, any good that you do between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is not going to help the last year's equation. There's only one thing you can do which is going to change last year's equation, and that's tshuva. That all the good that you do are next year's ledger. Last year's done already. You came out of Beinoni. And there's only one thing you can do. You like this? The only question is if it's true. Okay. But it's very nice. It's it doesn't. But it's very nice. It's very nice. One more approach that I want to say based upon the Pachad Yitzchak, and this is essentially just an introduction so that everybody is going to be more motivated for Tamar's lecture afterwards, which is going to deal with the Pachad Yitzchak. Rav Huttner says that according to the Rambam, what is a tzaddik? A tzaddik is somebody whose good outweighs their bad. Qualitative or quantitative? Qualitative. What's a rasha? Somebody whose bad outweighs their good. Qualitative or quantitative? Qualitative. Because what's a beinoni? It's also qualitative. And that's really what you were saying before. That if a beinoni does one more mitzvah, there's still a beinoni. If a beinoni does one more mistake, there's still a beinoni. He says you need to do a tshuva from your beinoniyut. You need to do a tshuva from your mediocrity. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Huttner was writing against modern orthodoxy. That was the beinoniyut that he was writing about. I'm not kidding. I think that that's what one of the messages, if you knew him, that he was giving to his audience was that, you know, you can't have a Judaism which is basically a power of Judaism. You need a Judaism which is full of fire and one which is motivated, and you can't sit on the fence. You can't be in the middle. And therefore, you need in order to do tshuva from your beinoniyut. So therefore, he's saying is that doing an extra mitzvah is not going to help. Doing extra vayit is not going to change it. It's that it's not something which is quantitative. It's something which is qualitative, and therefore, you need to undergo a profound change. So we have 5 minutes left. So I have 5 minutes to go back and tell you what I talked about before I started the class today, right? Yes. So, first of all, the Yerushalmi in source number 12, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'm going to read it quickly. The Yerushalmi starts off with a horrific question. It says, the people that die between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, did they die from last year's equation or from this year's equation? If it's from last year's equation, what took so long? If it's from this year's equation, why are you so quick on the noose over here? Like, what are you doing? That's the question it starts with. And it continues from that, and it says, well, whoever asked this question, didn't they hear about Rav, I'm on five lines down, the Amar Rav Krispada b'shem Rav Yochanan, Shalosh Pinkas Sa'ot Heim, there's three books, Echad Shel Tzadikim Gemurim, Ve'echad Shel Rasheim Gemurim, Ve'echad Shel Beinoniim, Ze Shel Tzadikim Gemurim Kfar Natlu, Apu Pusei. They were already sealed for Rosh Hashanah. Zerah Shoim Gomerim Kfar Natlu, Apupus Shelahem Mirosh Hashanah. Shobeinoniim Kfar Natlu Lahem Aseret Yemei Tshuva, Shobein Rosh Hashanah Leon Kippurim. They were given 10 days. Im Asu Tshuva, Nechtavim im Tzadikim. By the way, that's the source of the Rambam. The Rambam just took the Yerushalmi, which is, it wasn't the Rambam made some kind of big change here. He saw that's what the Yerushalmi said. By the way, that doesn't answer the question for us, but it at least lets us know what the Bavli wasn't clear. The Yerushalmi was clear. The Rambam used the Yerushalmi. So now, Kiddush Levana, which, by the way, as far as I can tell, is the last. It's the last. What's the word? Frontier. Why is it that feminists have taken all kinds of mitzvot on them, and they have not taken Kiddush Levana upon themselves? I'm just saying, as a whole, because they don't go to Marav. So why don't women go to Marav? Okay, so you don't have to go to Marav to say Kiddush Levana. Let's just start that. And you don't have to be in shul to say Kiddush Levana. But I'm just saying, it's interesting that that's the one that they have not gotten to yet. When do we say Kiddush Levana generally? During the month? When is it that the one's the first opportunity to say it? Answer is 3 days from the Molad. Okay, now you know more than 98% of the men in shul. It's from the Molad, not from Rosh Hashanah. 3 days from the Molad is the Ashkenazic men have to say Kiddush Levana. According to Sfaradim, it's 7 days from the Molad. When do we say it in Tishrei? So the correct answer to almost any halachic question is that it's a machloket. Good. So, source 13, the Rama writes, Ein mekadshin levana ad matzo yom kippur. That's the minhag. That's what people do. The Gra explains in source 14, Kimash shekatov b'mesechet sofrim, d'davka kashu mivusamu v'simcha, that when do you normally say it? You say it when you're happy. That's why they do it Saturday night, when you're wearing nice clothes and you're happy, so therefore you do it. Not during the week, when a person may not be in proper attire. Uvim midrash, b'matzei yom kippurim, batko yotzeit v'omeret, leich echol b'simcha, and so on. V'vi agot mamaniot, v'ayin la'el, simitof resh, or lahalan, simitof resh, kav dalet, v'haga, v'ochlim v'smechim. After saying all this beautiful thing, why saying it then? The Gemara then concludes and says, v'ayikar, however, the real proper thing to do, ki yesh omrim, is like the other opinion, shetov l'kadesh levana kodim yom kippurim, it's better to say it before Yom Kippur, kidei shemitzvah zu tachriya l'kav zchut, that this mitzvah will break the tie. Okay, so now that's very interesting, because the Gemara just now went out, all these other things that the Gemara just said, and not only that, there's a nafkamina, say kiddush levana as soon as you can, because that one thing could break the tie. Now, that means he disagreed with whoever said that, right? The Emek Bracha, good. So I'm going to explain to you what the Gra said, and we have less than a minute to do this. The source is source 15, and we're not going to read it. We're going to read the Gra himself citing it in source 16. But first, let me explain something to you. How many days is a year? Kama yamim yesh bishana. So shana is shin nun hey. How much is that? 355. How many days are there in a year? Shana, 355. But there are two different years. There is the solar year and there is the lunar year. Which one do Jews follow? Don't get fooled. Because we have lunar months but solar years. The problem is the solar year is 365, approximately, and that the lunar year, or the year of lunar months, is 355 approximately. So, but we follow both. We follow both. Every single year, the same day that Rosh Hashanah was 1 year, is going to be Yom Kippur the next year. If you follow the solar year. Keeping that in mind, let's look at the Gra in 16. We're going to skip the first couple lines. I'll read a little bit, but I won't translate anything. That the year is divided into lunar months. That they're part of last year because they are part of last year in terms of the 365 days, but they're part of, which means that, you know, that you have like an embassy is ex-territorial in terms of place.
The 10 days of tshuva are exterritorial in terms of time. They're both part of the new year and part of the old year. There's something completely different. Bein HaShmashot, is it day or is it night? So Bein HaShmashot is some day and some night is qualities of both. The year begins on Rosh Hashanah, but the year doesn't end until Yom Kippur. Which means that these 10 days somehow are both, but it's more than that. These are the 10 days, and now I'm going to say something deeper, and hopefully everyone will understand everything that I say, although I'm scared. On Rosh Chodesh, the Torah says that we should bring a korban. I'm reading to you, you don't have this in front of you, Bamidbar Kofchet Tedvav, Usir Izim Achad L'chatat L'Hashem. You bring a sin offering for God. It's a very strange thing. A sin offering for God, or a sin offering for God. The Gemara says it's a sin offering for God. God says, please bring for me, this is Gemara in Chulin Daf Samach, please bring for me a sin offering because I made the moon small. Because originally there were two great lights, the sun and the moon. By the way, this goes exactly to the point of the lunar and the solar. Originally there were two great lights, but God says, I made the moon small. And because I made the moon small, and that's what really Rosh Chodesh is all about. The moon becomes small, but then the moon begins to come back again. Rosh Hashanah is the holiday, Bekesa Hayom Chagenu. It's a holiday when the moon is covered up. All the other holidays are in the middle of the month by a full moon, where there's a total Gilui Shekhinah. Total, how do you say Gilui Shekhinah in English? But this is a holiday of hiddenness. So let me, quickly. God created the world. The Kabbalists use the word of Tzimtzum. All there was beforehand is God, and God creates, and God goes into hiding. When God goes into hiding, what happens? We don't see God. What happens when we don't see God? We make all kinds of mistakes. Which means the whole ability to sin comes back because of the miyut levana, because of God is in hiding. But of course, why does God hide? That gives us free will and gives us life. To create us means to create people who are free. People who are free are able to make choices. When we make choices, we make mistakes. What's the core of our being able to make mistakes? Because God created. Which is all of our mistakes come back to one point, Rosh Hashanah, we turn to God, well, this is your fault. You're the one who created us. You're the one. And God says, you know what? Bring a sin offering for me for having made the moon small, for having hidden the light, for there's no Gilui Shekhinah and you don't see me. God says, I'm sorry for this. But of course what happens, we end up sinning and then we have to go back to God and say that we're sorry. So when's the perfect time to say that we're sorry? During the 10 days, which are the reconciliation between the moon and between the sun, between the smaller light and the larger light, because that's what all of creation is about, and that is where all sin is. Which means these 10 days which reconcile the solar and the lunar is exactly the point of the creation, and it's the point of Dirshu Hashem Bihimatso. God is saying, even though you sometimes don't see me, I'm absolutely there. And especially on Rosh Hashanah, which is the core and the start of all this, God says, I am going to be there for every single individual and every single mistake that you made because I created you and gave you free will. I'm here. And just recognize that I'm here. And when you do, all those mistakes that you made can be fixed, just like the light of the moon can one day be fixed. Again, and that's very theological and not in terms of astronomy. And when that happens, when we use those 10 days and we understand the smallness of the light, it's at that point that we become very, very close to God. And that's what these 10 days are, the reconciliation between the sun and the moon. Bezrat Hashem, every single person here and all of Klal Yisrael should be written and sealed in the Book of Life. Shana Tovah.